Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the HR Happy Hour.
I like
this
that.
Episode, Shauna, hold up, Shauna. I have an important announcement. This episode of the HR Happy Hour is sponsored by Acquire, makers of award-winning Insight Workforce Planning Analytics Solution. With Insight, you'll get both software tools and workforce planning experts at your service. Go to acquireinc.com/insightinaction. To see Insight in action with a video demo. For more information, visit our friends at acquire.com, A-Q-U-I-R-E.com. All right, I did it. I had it. That was a live read. Voice of the HR Happy Hour, Mark Stelzner, has been traveling all week, so we couldn't get together to get the recorded intro done, but I got through it. It's fine. And, you know, our friends
good
at
enough.
Acquire are so great to us, and I hope they don't mind my slight butchering of the intro. So
we love you, Acquire.
I'm gonna tell you what. Well, we'll talk about Acquire some more later in the show. I've been demoing a couple of their products on the day job. Just phenomenally good stuff. So, welcome to the HR Happy Hour. This is episode 88. This is show is called Feedback and Performance. The feedback on that live read will be coming my way soon, I think.
Yes.
We are recording the show live on February 24th, 2011. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to come on board and ask a question or make a comment during the course of the show. And on Twitter, our hashtag is HR Happy Hour, of course, and we'll be keeping an eye on that. I am Steve Bowes, your host. With me... for episode 88, and who's been with me for 87 of the 88, or all 88 episodes, can't remember now, is
I've only
Shauna
missed one.
Right. So Shauna Morkey, the HR minion. Shauna, what is happening tonight?
I was doing work until the last minute because I'm at work.
Working hard and just grinding it out there down in Orlando?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's great. Someone asked me, maybe it was you, Shauna, earlier, asked me, how are you doing? You know, how are things? And I answered busy, right? That was the answer I gave. And I felt like such a jerk. Yeah, that's such a jerk-off answer, right? Because, like,
why?
Because here's why. Because when someone says, how are you, and you say busy, it's like, I mean, when did busy become sort of an emotional state that you respond to? I mean, that's, I felt like such a jerk, you know.
Oh, whatever.
Such a... But it is. It's a pompous, annoying answer. So I apologize.
I think you're providing some very negative personal feedback, Steve. I think you need to pull back a little bit and try and be a little bit more constructive.
Yeah, perhaps. But I'm annoyed with my own answer. So tonight we've got a really, really great show, a fun show, I think. The guys are lined up and ready to go, I think, getting ready for the happy hour. We're going to be talking about feedback, coaching, sort of a newer approach to recognition and performance management, and maybe even why software that's used in organizations doesn't have to suck, and hopefully we'll learn something about that tonight. Let's start by welcoming our guest tonight from the show. They are both from the software company called Ripple, and I'm sure you've heard of Ripple. They're like the one of the hottest companies in the space in the last couple of years. Coming to us from the great state of Canada. Sorry, I didn't mean that. let's say hello to our first guest, the great Daniel Debo. I'm going to read Daniel's bio, and if I can get all the way through without taking a drink, that'll be great. Daniel is the co-founder and co-CEO of Ripple, where he drives marketing, engineering, and product development initiatives. Before Ripple, Daniel co-founded WorkBrain, a workforce management software company that listed Walmart, Target, Best Buy, lots of other places among their clients. Daniel led WorkBrain's sale of Infor. There's a lot of money involved. But now Daniel's co-CEO of Ripple. He's a frequent contributor to Fortune, Huffington Post. He's everywhere, The Economist. You can't really – Daniel's everywhere. The great Daniel Debo's with us. Daniel, how are you tonight?
I'm great. I'm definitely not great the way you described it, but I'm happy to be here. It's fun. Fun to be on. Thanks.
Daniel, that is an impressive bio. So, you know.
It is.
I'd own up to that. I'd claim it. I wouldn't walk away from it at all. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The reality is always somewhat more disappointing than the build-up, but sure.
Aww.
I get that reaction a lot, too, when people meet me for the first time.
Oh, stop it.
I hear you.
You're so bad.
Well, Daniel, thanks so much. And let's bring on our other guest, also from Ripple, the great David Premer. You may know David best as the voice in the Ripple videos, but when he's not in the recording studio, David's in charge of sales at Ripple. David previously served as the director of solutions consulting at WorkBrain, and he's a chemist, a scientist, he's a genius, a hockey player, he's a fantastic guy, a friend of the show. David Premer, welcome to the HR Happy Hour.
Hey, thanks, Stephen. Yeah, I mean, I'll vouch for the fact that, you know, Daniel's introduction, he is not that impressive in real life, number one.
No.
I'm totally just, he's awesome. And number two, I got to say, it's been a little while since I've spoken to Sean on the phone, and I missed the laugh.
Right.
So I'm glad I'm getting to partake a little bit in that
it
tonight.
It has been a while.
Yeah.
It is one of the highlights of the show, there's no doubt about it. Well, Daniel and David, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us tonight. This is HR Happy Hour, Episode 88, a feedback and performance show. I'm Steve Bose. Sean is with me, of course. We have Daniel and David from Ripple. And maybe you, if you want to get on board as well, 646-378-1086. And on Twitter, our hashtag is HR Happy Hour, and we're checking that out as well. Daniel, I'll throw it to you first. So, you know, most of the folks listening to the show or might hear the replay later have heard of Ripple, but certainly there are some who probably haven't or may not be as familiar with Ripple and what you guys are doing up there. So maybe you could just talk a little bit about just what is Ripple and how the company and some of the concepts came to be.
Sure, no problem. So Ripple is social software that makes feedback, coaching, goal setting, recognition really easy, simple, and fun. And the sort of start of where this came from was us looking at the world after selling WorkBrain. David, by the way, was a key component of that company as well. And sort of saying, we're living in a real-time world. I mean, people are connected to each other. They're online. They're learning in different ways. There's a whole new generation of people coming to work. And it seems like we're still doing feedback in an antiquated process that's literally 50 or 100 years old. And we can do better. We just have to be able to do better. And wouldn't it be awesome if we could, you know, take the best learnings from leadership, development, human performance, behavioral economics, and also great software design that we see out there in great products like Twitter or Facebook or other tools online, and start building a new type of software company that was really focused on end users, on everyday managers, everyday employees, building something that they really like to use that solves their problems. And that's really the story of Ripple. Over the past few years, we've been assembling a team of people with deep HR competency and background, but also game developers, designers, mathematicians, just really interesting folks, and working with really smart companies like Mozilla, people who make Firefox, Rackspace, and trying to help work with these people to figure out, okay, how do we evolve and build a really simple social tool that helps people get feedback, coaching, recognition in real time, and basically try to reinvent something that really sucks, which is the traditional, you know, paper-based performance review.
Yeah, Daniel, I'm glad you brought that up. And so we'll sort of transition a little bit into the first part of the show. We wanted to talk a little bit about feedback and performance. And you mentioned, you know, the traditional performance review really does suck. And, you know, Shauna, I know you remember this show. Last year, in last summer, I guess it was, I think it was my favorite show of last year, I think. if not, it was in the top two or three. We had the great Samuel Culbert came on the show.
Oh, man.
Right?
Yeah,
remember
that was
Sam?
An awesome show.
So
he
wrote
great.
The book. He wrote the book, Get Rid of the Performance Review, and on that show and in that book he talked at length about, you know, why the performance reviews is horrible, everyone hates it, managers hate it, employees hate it, it doesn't really accomplish the objectives, at least in his opinion, certainly accomplish
right.
the objectives of the organization to improve people's performance and improve their development. And so, you know, I wonder if, you know, Daniel or David, you could comment a little bit about this. So you talked about the performance review. Do you get the sense that this sort of underlying or festering hatred of the performance review sort of is driving organizations to look for alternatives, one of which certainly they might find in Ripple?
So often, and I definitely like David to talk about it because he is on the phone and working with our customers all day long everywhere. You know, first thing I want to say is, like, we believe in performance. You know, we believe in people getting stuff done and being great at work and getting results. And I think sometimes people say, oh, you don't like performance reviews, you don't believe in accountability, you don't believe in results. That's just the last thing. We think that, you know, we want to help people be amazing and have teams work better together and help people learn and develop continuously and actually, you know, take the best research about how people learn continuously and make sure that that's applied. And one thing we all kind of know is that you just don't learn 6 months after the fact being told something in a very formal fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's – and the second thing is I don't think it's about a hatred. It's about saying, hey, that was a great system when all we had was paper and all we could do is sort of meet once in a while and we lived in a very top-down, hierarchical, command and control companies. But, like, the world has changed. Now we should try something different and reinvent it. And I think our customers are coming to us, frankly – saying we want to do better and we know we can do better. And because we have better software for almost all our other processes and we have better tools, for, frankly, that we get at home for free, what's out there that's new that actually gets to the results that we want, which is great teams working better together and helping us to build a feedback culture which helps people learn. And David, I mean, maybe you can tell a few stories about, like, how that comes to play.
For sure. Well, I mean, I think there's really a couple things. I think there's kind of the top down. People are saying, hey, you know what, you know, is the software meeting our needs today? You know, is the idea of doing feedback once a year and kind of doing that in a tool that's kind of online and very, very process heavy, does that make sense? But I would say it's also kind of the reverse. It kind of bubbles up from the bottom of the organization where people, and, you know, a lot of organizations as the demographic of the workforce changes, are hearing, especially from their Gen Ys, they're saying, hey, you know what? You know, our people are coming to us saying we want way more we want feedback. We want feedback often. We want it to be specific. We want you to help us know where we're going to be 6 to 12 months from now, and they just have this insatiable desire for more reinforcement recognition. So I think part of it is the software and the tools that people are accustomed to, but I think that's just really a symptom of the fact that in the workforce, the desire for more ongoing feedback is just so prevalent, and organizations are just really struggling to keep up. And when they look and they say, okay, well, great, you know, our people are asking for more feedback. How do we help give that to them? They turn to the old kind of, you know, the trusty pocket knife, which is the performance review, and they're saying, well, that ain't cutting it anymore. So we're actually, by virtue of the fact that our people are asking for it, are forced to seek out alternatives, and that's kind of where we come in as well.
Yeah. So
David, one other point that I want to add is, like, we are on the HR happy hour, and we definitely love, like, enlightened HR people. We work with them all the time. But, you know, I'd say 70 to 80%, maybe 90% of our customers are CEOs, managers, and directors. So in many cases, it's people in the organization saying, hey, listen, I know I have to do this thing once a year, but that's not good enough. I need a solution that actually helps me get work done, helps me get the most out of our team. And for us, that's the most gratifying because that's exactly what we thought was the main challenge. We'll talk about it later about how software is designed, but, like, that's really, I mean, we're hearing it from line executives who say, okay, I hear these issues that David's talking about. What's out there? And that's how we're finding them.
Yeah, and that's consistent, Daniel, that's consistent with some of the things I mentioned, the Culbert book again, but that's kind of consistent with one of his themes in his book, was that part of the problem with the performance review was it was still that sort of HR dinosaur kind of mentality clutching to that instrument. He felt it was a method of maintaining and sort of consolidating power in the organization, but certainly you can sense that reluctance to move off of a traditional process on the HR side. I've seen that myself.
Yeah, listen, it's easy to beat up on HR people, you know, frankly.
Yeah, that's not, I shouldn't
that.
Do that. That's our audience. Yeah, we got to.
Yeah, I mean, like, everyone does it. But, you know, I'll tell you one thing. It's you find that, like, we definitely get is, you know, people go into HR. It's a tough thing, right? You go in it, you care about people, you want to do the best. And then often, just by nature of your job, you have to deal with a lot of crummy stuff. And it's almost like this attribution area. It's like why people are scared of airplanes and not driving in cars, you know, because you hear about them on the news all the time, airplane classes. But you know, in same with HR, you know, all they hear about is bad things, and so they're sometimes forced to sort of think that not the best of people all the time. Well, I think you know the truth is we deal with people who are in HR all the time who are not trying to consolidate power. It's just that the performance review has been the only tool. I mean, no one's really sat down and said, wait a minute, what are we trying to get out of here? And what can we get out of it? You know, I think the best analogy to think about it is like email was an analogy of a piece of paper. Right? It's got a little BCC and, you know, blind carbon copy, right? We just took this metaphor and moved it onto the web and made email. Well, now in the past 5 or 6 years, you know, you started to see people reinventing communication, textual communication, but they're not email. They're wikis, they're blogs, they're instant messages, they're text messages. And so people started to reinvent this model of communication saying, what can we do now that we have the web? I think it's the same thing with reviews. It's not that people are hoarding power. It's just that was the tool that existed. It was right towards time, but times have changed. And so people now are coming to say, what else is out there? What's new? And that's what we spent a lot of time working with a lot of smart people trying to create.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I totally agree, of course. I mean, I would also add that, you know, in this day and age where people use, you know, social tools at work, like LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter, they use them for their own personal benefit, and they're usually not using them because the organization made them. So there's very much this undercurrent of, like, what's in it for me? So if I look at a line manager who has a team and an objective, and at the end of the day is going to be judged by how well their team is performing, they're like, okay, well, I'm going to seek out tools that help me do my job, because that's what we do nowadays, right? So the question, and we'll probably get into this a little bit later, which is as far as like the software component of what we're talking about is concerned and how people buy software and enterprise software, there's very much a what's in it for me component. And I think that kind of the challenge historically with traditional performance reviews is that a lot of managers and individuals will see it as it's just something I have to do. It's like something I have to do. It takes a lot of time. It's a bit of a pain in the ass. In the end, like it doesn't really benefit me because I'm just doing it once a year. So how can we kind of transform that into something that's more frequent and very directly impacts my ability to achieve a result with my team.
Yeah. Daniel and David, let's pause for a quick second, do a quick reset. We're with Daniel Debo, David Premer from Ripple. Shauna's here with me, of course. I'm Steve. We're talking feedback and performance on the HR Happy Hour. Our call-in number, 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to come on board and make a comment or ask a question tonight. Twitter, HR Happy Hour. Sean is keeping an eye on the Twitter stream as well. So, you know, you talked about feedback, David, and sort of indicated that, you know, the next generation of folks entering the workforce are really hungry for feedback, but not everybody is, right? I mean, do you run into issues sometimes with your customers you're working with that they don't really want that much feedback? I mean, I'm not sure I want that much feedback all the time. Are we bucking up against a sort of an intergenerational old codger syndrome that I have, or can your solution and just more in general, can we manage that balance between folks who really do want a lot of feedback and maybe not so much?
No, that's a great point. I think there's kind of two elements at play here. I mean, number one, there is the generational issue, and I think that, you know, depending on the generation you're talking about, obviously the younger generation wants way more. I don't think it's that the older generation wants less feedback and they don't want to know how they're doing. I think it's just more they're more accustomed to the mechanics and kind of the traditional process, so maybe they're not as vocal. I kind of liken this problem to kind of like going to the gym, and I would say, like, do people want to get healthy? Do, like, people want to, like, exercise? And, like, no one wants to be unhealthy. No one would agree that being unhealthy is a good thing, but not everyone goes to the gym. And so the question is, well, you know, why don't we go to the gym? Why don't we exercise? Part of it is, you know, just the mechanics. I mean, I talk about this a lot. Part of it is, you know, hey, look, we get focused on other things. You know, going to the gym is you know, too much in kind of the scheme of the things that we're doing. But a lot of it is the mechanics. And I think about that in the same way as feedback. it's not that for many of us we don't want feedback. Like if I said, hey, you know what, Steve, after every HR happy hour, I'm going to give you a few tips to improve the next one. Would that be okay? You would be fine with that. But if I said, well, you know, the mechanism I'm going to use to give you that feedback is I'm going to fill out like a 10-page report and have you do that. It kind of becomes
note. Right. And call me in for a formal meeting where I have to sign it and agree to everything on there and place it in my permanent file. Right.
It's going to be stapled with you wherever you go, man. You're not going to be able to get away from it. So, no, it's the same thing. If I said, well, it's like if you wanted to get healthy, and I said, well, the only way to get healthy is we're going to go to the gym for like 5 hours a day. I'm going to put you through the most excruciating workout you ever had. You're like, you know what? Like, I want to be healthy, but that's a little bit too much for me. And the same thing with feedback, right? If you can get feedback in the moment and make it really easy, then, like, sure, like, it helps me. It's good for everyone. If it's a root canal, then you're just going to start associating the process of getting feedback, which is, you know, overall positive, with a negative experience. And I think that's part of the syndrome that we've come under here.
So I'm gonna toss in a couple of thoughts. One is, I think, you know, there's she actually spoke at HR Tech, Tammy Erickson, and, you know, when she first met us, she had the same reaction. She sort of cringed, and she said, ooh, feedback, what do I want more of that for? And as she sort of dug into it deeper and started thinking about it, I mean, she had some of the most insightful thoughts. And her point was, number one, it's a definitional thing. When you talk to young people, she also said it's not demographic, it's psychographic. It depends on what you mean by the word feedback. If the word feedback means judgment and appraisal linked to your performance and the potential of getting fired because you've been feedbacked in the wrong way, no one wants that. But if what you mean by feedback is learning and the chance to develop at work and get ahead in your career and get better, or maybe get recognition for doing something great, then, yeah, people want feedback. I'm actually going to – I was going to write a blog about this, but I'm happy to share it tonight. So we've worked with a bunch of academics all the way through this process trying to figure out how to build the best thing. Great people like, you know, Marshall Goldsmith or Gary Latham on goal setting or Jeff Pfeffer at Stanford. And recently, we worked with an academic named Nicole Gravina at Roosevelt University, and she wanted to analyze feedback around the question, do people really want more feedback? And so we blinded out any confidential information, gave her a data set, and she just went through this whole data set with a bunch of PhD students and did the whole double blinding. And what she found was amazing was that people using Ripple, just to sort of use it to ask a question for feedback, it was 2-1. Of people seeking constructive feedback versus people kind of fishing for compliments. And I kind of blew me away. And it was like, wow, people really do want to learn how to get better. And if that's what you mean by the word feedback, then, yeah, I think unquestionably people want to get better at stuff. And, I think it's the attribution. Again, same thing. Do people want to learn how to get better at playing piano if they're a piano player? And most people spend a lot of time at work. And if they care about it, and I think most people do care about their work and their job and how they're seen, they'd like to learn how to get better at it. I mean, who wants to do something and feel like you know where you stand or know if you're doing a good job?
Yeah, Daniel, those are great points. Thanks for that. You know, Shauna, I think, you know, why I think about this in the feedback mechanism, I think it's right. The punitive nature of it is sort of the part of it, right? Because I get the sense in the traditional process, don't you think, like, you've sat through a lot of these performance review meetings or helped coach people to write them. You're always like looking for that balance, right? You know, when a few good things are written on the performance review, you've always got to slide in those couple of zingers because you feel compelled to. Right? you feel compelled to, okay, we've got to balance it out. And the person getting the feedback, right, what do they walk away from the meeting from? They think about the negative, right? They think about, you know, not the 10 good things they did, right? Yeah, I think that's definitely true.
Well, even when I was judging high school debate, I would, you know, you're trying to encourage these kids. You're not trying to scare them away or make them think that they're stupid. So we would always try and put in like 3 compliments for every thing that they could do better to try and, you know, to let them know that, yes, you're on the right path. Please don't quit. But, you know, you really probably shouldn't say that Hitler's a communist.
Right.
Just say it.
I guess that's probably not the best tactic, right, in the debate.
No. Frankly, you shouldn't be bringing Hitler up in any debate round, but, you know.
In those kind of questions, yeah, I think so. The better point is to avoid the Hitler reference, no doubt. So, hey, let's let's transition a little bit and talk a little bit about recognition. I mean, as Ripple's developed, and maybe Daniel or David can talk a little bit about sort of the evolution of your solution and the tools that you've created at Ripple. But as Ripple's developed and evolved a little bit, a big component of the solution now is in and around recognition, and specifically the feature of sort of recognizing other people. You call it the thanks feature, I think, in the solution. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about how Ripple sort of evolved from that sort of feedback, anonymous feedback kind of paradigm that it sort of initially set out to what it's become today, and then specifically talk a little bit about why that recognition component you guys felt was important and have built that into the software.
Sure. So I think this is just a continuation of the story of, like, how did we evolve and how are we building a business? And the answer is feedback itself, and from three areas. One is talking with customers and companies and organizing events where we talk to thought leaders and practitioners, and two, from just talking to end users, and three, from looking at the data about how people use Ripple. And all of this is basically the techniques that consumer software companies use to figure out how to make, you know, something really compelling that people want to use. And so what we started to do was sessions where we tried to talk about this word feedback, and very quickly realized, you know, it's not just about people who are really seeking information on how to improve, but it's also about recognition, making sure that people do this very basic hygiene. That's not rocket science. You know, you read the 1 Minute Manager and it says, you know, make sure every day you give public praise to people for doing something. It's so simple and so easy. And all the good data, whether you're talking about the stuff that Dan Pink has or a recent McKinsey study, it all tells you, like, that's what gets people going every day, just some positive recognition. So the second thing was talking to users, and they said, yeah, we like this tool, that's great, but how do I kind of just practically give it to someone? So we started to hear that. And the third was data. We looked and we saw that people would preemptively respond to a feedback request that was given to them. They wanted, and if it kept coming, they would just be much more likely to give it. Now, of course, you know, it's kind of common sense. It's easier to give somebody something nice than it is to, you know, go out and ask a question, which can be, we agree, sometimes a little scary.
Right.
So
sure.
We did what we did. We kind of experimented. We put out this feature called Kudos at first, actually, and allowed people to give sort of fixed badges. And the response was just kind of overwhelming. And we found all sorts of things that people really wanted about this tool to evolve and to where it is today. And I'll take you through a couple things about why thanks has come that way. So the reason we switched from kudos to thanks was, again, data. We just did an A-B test and saw which got more people using this tool. And it turns out thanks is easier than kudos. And so the way people use it now is it's completely bottom-up. So it comes into a company, and people can create their own badges. And this is the really powerful thing, you know. The formalized competency KSOC world is great. But basically what's happened is all the tools that are out there have become like data entry tools. Let me describe you in this performance review and write down some data about you. That's not a very compelling way of feeling about yourself. But more importantly, it's not the natural language that people use to describe each other. You know, people tend not to say, you know, this person's got great competencies in, like, you know, code design.
That's just not natural.
People will say, that guy's a ninja. That guy's a rock star. He's amazing. And in fact, every company, every team will have their own language. And so the challenge was, how do you translate that social behavior, the thing that people are already doing? Like, they're sending emails and saying, hey, great job. Or we saw this happening, you know, tons of companies, great companies would have, like, you know, a recognition wall. Still very top down. So we created the badges that allowed people to come in, create their own badge. And just like a wiki, teams can define what they mean. So if I create a ninja badge, that's easy. Everyone else can come in and comment and let it evolve so that it starts to take real meaning for people. You know, sometimes people think it might be a little silly, but, you know, no one thinks General Petraeus is silly when he shows up with a chest full of medals, because we know what those medals mean. They mean something, to win a Bronze Star or to have a campaign medal. And we wanted to do the same thing at work, because when someone says you're a rock star at work, people around you, they know instantly what it means. The last part was, how does this turn into real good kind of KSOC data that helps build competency information in a much more bottom-up, granular way? Well, when you build a badge, you can also attach skills to it or competencies. And that's kind of subtle. So as you keep getting the ninja badge, you might also be getting tagged as, you know, great developer,
attention
to detail. And so that's how it evolved, bit by bit, by learning how people use it, until now it's just become, and then, you know, the thing is, look, it's fun. right? Like, it's a fun, easy thing to do, and no one feels bad about the idea that they should just recognize people at work. And that's basically the answer to how it came about.
Yeah, and Daniel, before you mentioned sort of the link to skills and sort of more traditional competencies, my question I was going to ask, and I think you've already answered, is how do you balance out, you know, the need of, say, even a larger organization that wants to staff a project team that wants to be able to cull the database for, you know, level 3 Java developers that are available, you know, that speak Spanish or something, versus, you know, let me just see who got the ninja coder badge, right? Because that could be a difficult translation to make, but you're sort of building that link from the badges, which people sort of are more apt and more prone to engage with sort of some more structured data on the backside.
That's exactly right. And I think also not just more structured, but more accurate. Because, you know, now you're getting the opinions of lots and lots of people around an organization about a person. And we know, you know, where we're heading with this is the ability to algorithmically determine the quality of that rating, the quality of the ranking, depending on who gave it, to, you know, I'm sure a question people often ask is, you know, to sniff out gaming, and there are ways of doing that. But, you know, thus far it's been a challenge. I mean, people just find it genuinely fun. But I think, you know, the point I'd make for a lot of HR people often is, like, how do I get a seat at the table? How do I be relevant to the business? Well, like, this is it. This helps, right? People in the business are like, this is great because it motivates people today, not in 6 months, not in a year. It actually helps our culture. It makes people feel great about what they're doing, and it's kind of empowering to them, right? They can be part of this.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I would add, which is great, is, you know, in addition to having just more data to help support some of the awesome programs and just kind of, you know, seeking out, you know, people who have certain skill sets in the organization, I think there's also, like, this bottom-up value, which is when we speak to HR pros, they say, during exit interviews, we hear a lot that people are, when they leave, it's because they didn't get recognized for the things that they're doing, or they didn't get recognized frequently enough or, you know, in the right way. And so, you know, what that kind of translates to is, like, people are saying, look, people are doing great things at our company, but we're missing them. Like, we know that we're missing them, and why? Because the recognition program that we have in place, whether it's like a quarterly town hall or a monthly meeting or shout-outs via email, it's not granular enough. It's not picking up all of these awesome things people are doing. Sometimes it's because it's very top-down, so it relies on managers, for example, nominating their people. But if we could just provide a way for peers to recognize each other, not only, to Daniel's point, we have a better inventory of kind of what people are good at and be able to kind of really leverage that data, but we actually have people who are improving, people who are self-aware of what they're actually good at, and we won't be missing these opportunities to recognize these great people for lack of visibility, right? And then,
right,
of course, you know, if we can save one person from turning or churning because they didn't feel like they got the recognition, then, like, that's a huge win for the organization.
Yeah, so one last thing to point out is it's not the thing that we're trying to get to is that, like, people already do this. Like, this is not new. People always send emails and say, hey, good job, and they'll copy 5 other people. The fact is that gets totally lost, right? Not everybody gets to see it, and, you know, it's like a email scavenger hunt at the end of the year. Like, what do they say about this guy? Did he do anything good? And so, you know, what we try to do is make it public and findable and recordable. So if you do want to do a traditional review, that's great. But, you know, this allows you to find it and make sure it's there. But the far more powerful thing, in the same way that it's powerful, you know, there's a Twitter stream right now, right, HR Tech, or HR Happy Hour, everyone's talking, is that when you make the thanks public, people can pile on.
Right.
Other people can say, like, yeah, thumbs up, hey, I saw that, that was awesome. And not only that, they can model good behavior. So people start to see, like, oh, hey, and I mean, it happens at Ripple, like, hey, Dan, the CEO, gave so-and-so a thanks for doing something great. Hey, that's good behavior. That's what people here like to see. Okay, I want that. And I think that's a pretty powerful thing. It's just a very different paradigm, but that's the idea of what we're trying to get to. It's a different world, and what are we doing now to adapt to that different world?
It's really funny. I mean, it's a really good point. I mean, part of what we've seen help, you know, our service really take off is that executive engagement. So, for example, someone does something really awesome in the organization. In the old world, to Daniel's point, like, I send an email to that person, maybe their boss and a couple other people so that they're aware, but there's really no good way for the CEO, for an executive, to kind of swoop in, see what's going on, and drop comments all over the place. And we've actually heard from, you know, the clients that we work with that, hey, you know what, where really Ripple took off for us was that when people started sharing thanks and recognition, and the executive team started swooping in and making comments, all of a sudden it was kind of like I described as the Facebook example of, if I posted pictures to my wall but no one ever liked them or commented on them, I'd be like, what the hell? Like, no one's looking at this stuff.
And right.
So like, when people look at them and they leave their mark and they comment, it's like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden that thing I did, you know, Daniel saw that. I didn't think he even knew about that. And what that does is, not only does that impact me, but then other people who are kind of sitting on the fence, who are, you know, maybe, you know, a little bit later to the party, will be like, hey, you know what? I can get that visibility too. I can get, you know, I can find out what I'm good at. And so through the magic of social software, you get this enhanced engagement, all about kind of just enhancing the very simple things that people were doing before social software. Just, you know, now they have kind of an outlet and a tool that helps amplify the benefit of that experience.
Yeah, one of the things I was thinking about as I was looking, you know, at the recognition component of the tool and following on some of the points you guys have made is in a way that this could really kind of, for an organization, help to really surface a lot of those hidden contributors, right, that you just may never really know much about if they're sort of buried. Maybe they're not that, you know, that obvious superstar contributor, but they're doing a really good job. They're valuable to the organization. And all of a sudden, when there's this platform or this avenue for their good work to be recognized more publicly and more overtly across the organization, that can all of a sudden like raise the profile of people who maybe might have gotten been under the radar for a while.
Totally. I mean, this is something a lot of our customers are in the technology space, and they're pretty savvy, and they're also pretty skeptical of top-down systems. You know, they like flat distributed organizations because they think it generates better information. And this is a good example, right? I love managers, but no manager is omniscient. They don't necessarily know everything that's going on underneath them, and oftentimes they've got blind spots. And how do you ferret out and find, like, there's that quiet guy in the corner who, like, you know, I think he's quiet, he's not doing anything. But the rest of your team is like, we rely upon him because he might have produced a lot of output, but he's the guy that helps us, you know, whatever, you know, keep our systems up or keeps the dev environment moving. And finding that person out and finding that hidden gem is a really powerful thing. And, you know, we just think the model of finding it out through, like, essentially the essential conversation of, hey, you did a good job and making that public versus, like, evaluating and rating and then seeing how, you know, what, you know, on a very infrequent basis, is just much more powerful and positive. Like, I think that's the point we're trying to make, is this stuff doesn't have to be negative. It can be a very positive experience, which is positive in a way that's like directly correlated with like what we now know motivates people and therefore gets more output, more production.
Do you worry though that's maybe that it's too positive, and by that I mean, like, you know, the functionality in the tool says thanks, there's not one that says no thanks, right? Do you worry that there's a tendency, maybe to just be, that'll bury some of the more constructive but critical feedback or that needs to happen? Do you sense that at all in your organizations you're working with?
Yeah, you know, the answer is no. I have to say, like, the concern about, like, you know, people are too damn happy around here and people are feeling really good about their job, that's
right,
generally not a concern that people tend to come to us with. And I'm not being sarcastic. I just think it's never, ever been a concern that people have said. And mostly that's a cultural thing. If people are, you know, remember, people are being public about this, right? So are you going to stand up in front of the company meeting and say, you know, thanks for having drinks with me last night, here's my beer drinker badge?
Right.
No, you're not going to do that, right? So are you going to do that? Are you going to do that online? No, everyone sees it, right? So there's a good social, and it's cultural specific. Each company will behave in the right way for them. I think there's a second part, which is, like, when we said we were understanding what feedback was about, it wasn't just about getting feedback anonymously or gathering your own. It wasn't just about recognition. It was also heavily, heavily based on, like, goal setting and coaching. And David, maybe you comment a bit on, like, That's when Ripple really starts to change people's cultures, is when people start to get mentorship and coaching using the tool for the private one-on-one, where the constructive stuff, where it's the anti kudo, you know, you're not always awesome. But that's best delivered privately. And we've really figured out how to be able to facilitate that, make sure one-on-ones are happening. Dave, I don't know, do you have any comments on it?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think you're totally right. The comment that we hear, especially in demos, because when we demo the product, we usually start off with thanks. And people always say, like, you know, is this all like rainbows and unicorns, or like, is there, like, where can I tell someone that,
right,
that they suck? Like, where does
everyone
that happen?
Loves unicorns.
There you go. I mean, so it's a totally fair point. And the idea is that in real life, and I love using the term in real life, like what actually happens, well, we don't tell people they suck in public, you know, generally speaking. We have one-on-one conversations with them, and we kind of relay this information. And where we saw Ripple really take off was kind of the inclusive nature of recognizing that feedback is information that I source on my own. It's information that people will say about me in public that is public and positive. And then there's the one-on-one conversations that I have with people I work with. Could be my manager, could be someone on my team, a mentor, someone I'm working with on a project with. It could be good feedback, constructive feedback, you know, and all the like. The challenge was, how do we keep track of all this stuff, and how do we make that conversation collaborative? So, you know, the traditional problem was, I hear from my manager when I've done something bad, and it's usually in some kind of punitive format and, you know, in the annual review. It would have been better to kind of hear that throughout the year and be part of the ongoing conversations that, guess what, we're having already. Like, when we go into organizations and we say, do your managers or do you sit down with your teams or people that you work with at all and talk about stuff? They're like, yeah, every week we talk about stuff. Like, all right, well, what do you talk about? And so, you know, we talk about what we're working on, what we can do better, here's some advice, here's a tip, you know, and I say, well, great, well, how do you remember all the stuff that you're supposed to talk about leading up to that conversation and coming out of that conversation? And the most popular answers are email, my little binder that I carry with me, sticky notes, or nothing.
Those are handy.
And
sticky notes never get lost, too.
they're very adhesive, right? So, no. But yeah, so the idea is that all this stuff exists somewhere, but it exists in a crappy place that's hard to get at. It's very hard to remember. And come the end of the year, if I need to give this person an increase or, you know, and again, to get away from the unicorns and rainbows here, if I need to terminate someone, it's not the, you know, the annual review could be helpful, but it's actually the stuff that happens leading up. It's the everyday stuff, and how do we track that? So what we said was we need to have a way for people to keep track of the conversations they have with people they work with, and help make those people really better and effective at having those conversations. So to Daniel's point, we work with a lot of tech, creative firms, a lot of organizations that, you know, have a lot of Gen Ys that are growing really quickly and have had to promote younger people into positions of management who are really good individual contributors. Now, you know, I was one of those people myself a little while ago, and I know I didn't have any kind of formal management training, and there's some stuff that, you know, that I didn't do that in retrospect I should have done. And
right.
So the idea is, how can we have a piece of software that helps promote the desirable behaviors of tracking things that happen between teams and people, make it fun and make it collaborative so I can have that bionic memory? I don't have to be like an expert, you know, super, super crazy manager where I have a separate Outlook folder for each of my employees, and whenever someone says something nice or have a piece of feedback, I just put it in there. So we took the kind of that social paradigm and applied it to keeping track of one-on-one conversations. And the cool thing was, like, a couple things happened. Number one, people did develop this bionic memory that they could refer to at a moment's notice, right? Like, I want to know the stuff that Daniel did, all the recognition that he received, and all of the actions that he's completed and notes that, you know, we had in our conversations for the last 3.5 months. Like, I can get that in 2 seconds. The other thing, you know, that we found was that, you know, people were just much better about having these conversations, because all of a sudden the interaction was, you know, a lot more effective. And then lastly, and this is probably, you know, back to the what's in it for me and probably the most impactful thing, was that all of a sudden when Ripple was really taking off, I mean, there was one client we worked with, Shaw Communications, which is basically kind of the Comcast of Central Canada. And what they found was they introduced Ripple to a team of 30 people in a specific group. And within a few months, it had spread to 700 people. They did not do a kickoff. They did not have a shred of Ripple anywhere on their intranet. And when we went in, we flew to Calgary, which is where they're based, and we kind of, you know, we wanted to do a lobotomy. We're like, what the heck happened here, right?
Right.
And when we played the game of broken telephone, of basically, you know, going to people who are 2, 3, 4 degrees removed from the initial team, we said, well, what do you use Ripple for? He said, oh, it just keeps us on track. We keep track of all our conversations, helps us drive consistency. And when we went to their people, we said, well, why do you like using it? They said, because we have a voice all of a sudden, right? I'm sitting down with my manager to have a conversation. I have an area, a tool, a service that I can use to ask my manager to do things for me, to give my manager feedback. So it didn't become kind of a top-down thing.
it just became a tool that we use to collaborate and keep track. So that, I would say, you know, from the perspective of the continuum of services and interactions that people use Ripple to engage in, those one-on-one conversations have probably been one of the most, you know, the most powerful thing that the people use Ripple for.
David, thank you for that. Let's take a quick pause, take a breath. I like the Shaw, the Comcast of Central Canada. That's like, I just love that. That's very, you know, because I envision that as, you know, I'm glad you mentioned like 700 users, because when you laid out the Comcast of Central Canada, I had some different thoughts. I was thinking, you know, sort of like Shauna, sort of how I make fun of Birmingham as the cultural capital of the South. You know, I wasn't too impressed with the Comcast of Central Canada right initially. Good recovery.
Yeah. Well, Shaw has 13,000 employees. They're pretty big.
Now, yeah. Well, now I know. Initially, though, I was nonplussed, but. This is the we're on the HR Happy Hour. We're with Daniel Debo and David Premier from Ripple. We're talking about feedback and performance. Now I want to talk about software a little bit and sort of Daniel, you wrote one of the great posts. I guess it was a couple months ago it came out, but about why enterprise software doesn't have to suck. Or I don't know if that was the exact title, but that was sort of the theme of the piece, and it was a fantastic piece. But I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about just enterprise software and just why does it usually suck? Why do we hate using it, whether it's an HRIS or a performance management tool or an ATS? And sort of what can we do about it? Like, are we all doomed to use, like, crappy software at companies, like, until more companies like Ripple come along?
No, you're not doomed. It was actually three reasons enterprise software doesn't have to suck. I was actually blown away by how many people sort of followed and picked up off that post. Because I guess it hit a chord. And it's a longer answer, but basically it's because it's not built like consumer software, right? Enterprise software is designed, I guess David and I both know, we helped to build WorkBrain. WorkBrain is a very successful $100 million revenue company, and as you said, we had the biggest companies in the world using the product. And, you know, how did you sell that software? Well, you know, first you look at that RFP, which has got like 10,000 features that somehow the company's decided, like, we must have all these features. And I'm not knocking it. Sometimes you do. But really, what happens is you get into the feature arms race between enterprise software salespeople. So they go in and they say, okay, if we're going to win this deal and get the next $1 million contract from, you know, the buyer, because they're the person who has the check, right, the head of HR, the head of operations. And they say, if we don't do this thing, we're not going to get it. Okay, let's put it on our roadmap. Let's add that feature in. And very, very quickly, you know, and then great, the customer says yes. And then we spend a gazillion dollars paying for implementation fees and paying for change management and training. And, you know, software vendor's very happy because, you know, hey, we've got lock-in in this complicated process that we're locked into. But, you know, no one really gives a crap, quite honestly, about the end user. Not really, right? They're not the first thing in that process. And that's kind of why, that's how software evolved, right? Enterprise software reps would go talk to buyers who basically had all the power to decide what the product was. And I mean this with disrespect, but whether you're in supply chain management or expense management or finance or in HR, you're not a software designer. You're an HR professional, right? And just because you think this thing has to work this way doesn't necessarily mean it's the best experience. But because you have the check, that means the vendors are going to build it for you. So that's kind of how things were, right? You got it stuffed down your throat, and that was the way things were. And then this magical thing called the Internet showed up. And I'll just tell you a little anecdote. At WorkBrain, you know, we thought we were like the cast me out. Everything was great. And I remember going to a meeting in around 2003. We had a great services person who was ex-PeopleSoft and came in and said, you know, I think we have a problem. I was the head of marketing. I said, I think we have a problem at Disney and AMC Theaters. No, nothing's wrong there. The project's on track. Project sponsor's really happy. Everything's great. And I said, no, here's the problem. Let me show you these things. I brought printouts of this new idea called a blog. And it was all these 18-year-old kids who worked at Disney and AMC Theaters saying, WorkBrain sucks. I hate this software. It's killing me. It's destroying my life. And I realized at that moment it was an epiphany. I was like, oh, my God, the whole world's changed. Because if your software sucks, it's no longer going to be able to be kept a secret and demoed, right? The way people are going to use software now and buy it is it's going to show up inside that company, and people are going to talk about it through the networks of people that they connect with online. Now, this is starting to come to play, and you see this not just in HR, in other areas. You know, there's a company called Box.net that's doing a great job of making Microsoft life terrible with SharePoint, or a company called Zendesk that's just killing it in the customer support space. And bottom line is what they're doing is building software as if it were consumer software, and they're focusing on the end user, just like we did, saying, you know what, if we could get this into the hands of managers and we could solve their problems, because if you add up, like, you know, a 1,000-person company, right, you know, if you could say how much pain in this performance coaching development process, what's the pain that's felt by the manager and the employee? They're not the one with the budget, but if you multiply their pain by everybody, their problem is way bigger than the HR department. They just don't have the money. But in the new paradigm, if you can design for those people, they'll just start bringing the tool to work and start using it. And you saw this first start to happen with, like, in the technology sector, right? Like, people in IT would bring Linux into the office. Then they would bring in, like, Apache servers. Then they would bring in instant messaging. And people said, no, no, you can't do that. But eventually, you know, it became more productive, right? Like, people were using stuff because they wanted to get their jobs done, and they were more efficient than waiting for the whole process to unfold. So I think that's kind of why the software kind of stinks, is kind of the way it was sold. It was sold to buyers and not users, and it was designed for them, and there was no incentive to care about the end user, really. And the world has changed now that people are, end users are actually bringing software to work all the time. And two last points. One is there's a great book, I think it's called Unleashed, that talks about the stat that 40% of employees are now bringing software to work that helps them be more productive. And, you know, you only have to listen to the Apple call, last Apple finance call, where they spent a good 15 minutes or 10 minutes talking about this trend called consumerization of the enterprise,
right,
where it's the application of consumer software design techniques to enterprise application problems. You know, at the end of the day, right, like, we have this world of enterprise apps, consumer apps, but as far as I know, when you are in a company during the day, you're the same person as when you go out at the end of the day, right? Like, just because you're sitting at the desk at work during the day doesn't mean you all of a sudden accept crummy software. You're enterprise during the day, consumer at night. We're just one person. So we should start designing for those people, and you're going to get much better software. And I think that's the trend that we're a part of. We're not the only ones who are doing this. But I think that is going to be a big change in the next generation of software that's coming out.
Yeah, now I think you guys, what happens at Ripple and what's been going on at Ripple reminds me a lot of what has happened at other companies. You mentioned Box and Zendesk. I think about 37 Signals, too. Right, a really similar approach, and they talk about recently. They talked about the IT department is dead, right? And for some of the reasons you described, that people are bringing their own tools, they're acquiring them, or they're carrying them into the enterprise, maybe on mobile devices or tablets, right? That they're bringing in, and the expectation that those tools and technologies that they're using on other jobs or in their personal life or at school or what have you are going to be available to them in the enterprise is certainly more and more predominant. There's no way it's going to slow down, right? But how about
someone just actually tweeted about cost because I wanted to talk about that. They asked about price. You know, when we started Ripple, we said our competitor is not the big HR vendors. Our competitor is pizza. And what we meant by that is, like, how much does every company, you know, they have pizza lunch once a month or cake or something like that, right? And we were like, well, that's like $5-$10 a month every company. I was just in a customer the other day, a 140-person software company. David and I were actually both there, and they just spent $2,000 buying everybody pizza for lunch. I'm like, why do you do that? Oh, it's good for morale. It's good and helpful. You know, people get together. It's a good thing, and, you know, we want people to be happy. So we always thought of, like, our price point as being cheaper than pizza.
Right.
But to get there, you have to start with free. I mean, that's a big deal, right? So if you give your software away for free, you spend most of your resources on building a great product and less of your resources on expensive salespeople flying out to take people out to dinner. You know, big vendors don't think they give away a lot of stuff for free. We never did, but we did. We just called it sales and marketing expense and consulting,
right,
solutions consulting. So our belief is just spend the money on a great product and it'll sell itself, more or less. And make it really cheap.
David's quite right.
Go ahead, David.
No, I mean, this is the last thing I was going to say is, you know, when we go and to the extent that we sell Ripple, and a lot of times selling for us is really just helping people understand, telling stories about how their clients use it, you know, I say, look, when I'm talking to people, it actually doesn't matter. You know, I get paid to say great things about Ripple. You know, we love what we do, and we think we can have a huge impact. And when we talk to folks on the customer side, executives, HR pros, we even say, look, you might think Ripple's the best thing ever as well. And that, you know what, that makes, you know, as little a difference as whether or not I think it's good. The only thing that makes a difference is what your people think. If your people like it,
and they love it and they use it, it's going to have an impact. So let's focus all of our energy, and you know, this gets into kind of, you know, the deployments and how we position when we do top-down rollouts, but, like, what's in it for them? If they see what's in it for them, they'll like it, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what even you and I think.
Yeah, no, I think you can't go wrong, you know, in life, Shauna. If you focus on the what's in it for me, you know, I'm with you. I'm with you. And I think you'll win a lot of battles that way by focusing on what's in it for me. So I think you should think about that, Shauna.
In it for you in particular?
For
always.
Me, yes, me, specifically me, absolutely.
Should I always approach things of what's in this for Steve?
Yeah, but it's a great point. No, guys, I think it's an awesome point and well made as well. Wow, man, that was like a fast hour show. We're almost down to the end
yeah.
of it with Daniel and David from Ripple. Guys, just any sort of final words, final thoughts? Certainly, you know, ripple.com, RYPPLE.com, of course, to check out Ripple. And so for folks out there who are listening and, you know, there's been a lot of questions and comments on the back channel about checking out the tool and some less than flattering comparisons to other tools that they might be using today. What should they do if they want to just learn more about Ripple and maybe give it a run in their organization?
Dave, you go first.
Yeah, you know, look, the easiest thing to do, we help organizations, you know, use Ripple and figure out how they can get the most value out of it. So the barrier to start using Ripple is super low. There's no complicated implementation. Obviously, it's SaaS. There's no, you know, there's no complicated setup. So our advice is listen to your users. Try to kind of bubble up their concerns and understand what they're talking about, and then help position Ripple as, the what's in it for them. And just start. I mean, that's the best thing. That's the best advice we can give. We're always happy to help and share stories and best practices. But there's no better way to do it than just jump in. And we also recommend when people jump in, like, jump in wholeheartedly. You know, like, we always say, people say, well, you know, maybe I'll just try Ripple with, like, a few people and just kind of see how it goes. And it's like, well, is using Facebook with five people fun? Like, as fun as Facebook is? Like, sharing
right.
Ooh, very good point.
You know, like, that's not fun. So, you know, the mechanics of Ripple work best when you can take advantage of the network effect, because what you're going to do is you're going to get a lot of those people who are kind of sitting on the periphery saying, hey, I don't know, you know, about this Ripple thing, or I don't know about feedback or recognition, and you're going to create an environment where it's safe for them to do that. And if you do that with a small group, it doesn't work as well. So, you know, we always help people. We hold their hand, and, you know, just jump in. We're happy to help.
Great. Well, great.
Yeah, one of our board members is this super smart dean of a business school, a guy named Roger Martin, and he writes books about design thinking and how to help overcome people who are skeptical of change. And he has this great saying that we like to say, which is like, turn the future into the past. And that's really the best advice that you get. Like, if you're skeptical or you're curious, it's free. It's free to start, right? And you can sign up as many people as you want to get going. And try it out. You can use all the stuff we talked about. You can coach people for free. You can start giving badges and customizing it for free. You can ask for feedback. We built this thing so that David's point that he's making, which is like, it doesn't matter what we say. If your people like it, then it's something that we know you'll want to pay for. And we have enough confidence that we want you to try it. Get going by kicking it off. And, you know, give us a shout. Like, we actually have a team. We don't call them salespeople. We call them customer coaches for a reason. We think the best way to get sales is to help our customers be successful. We've got a lot of tips and tricks. Give us a shout. But really try it out. You know, thinking about it, you'll appreciate this. There's, you know, sort of people say like social media and all the discussion about it. Social media is kind of like sex. You can talk about it all you want, but until you actually do it, you don't really quite know what it's like.
Oh, there you go. I think we're going to absolutely money quote of the night. Hour, minute 59, we got to it. Daniel Debo, David Premer from Ripple, thank you so much. Ripple.com, check them out. Shauna,
no
great
problem.
Show.
Pleasure.
Shauna, you can open up the lines for after show if you like. Let me just read
okay.
this quick announcement. This episode of the HR Happy Hour was brought to you by Acquire. The people who make award-winning solutions that will make you an award-winning employee. Actually, they can't promise that you'll win an award, but schedule a live demo with an Acquire rep, and they'll tell you how fabulous you are. They will, and maybe give you a badge. So check out acquireinc.com/insight in action to request a one-on-one demo from our friends at Acquire. really our two favorite software companies, Acquire number one, of course, and Ripple number two. So that's how I'm stacking you guys right now. So thanks so much, everybody. Great show tonight. Get your HR Evolution tickets. There's only 18 left.
Yes.
HR Evolution tickets.
We got
18 more. I want to see those tickets sold as well. And so that's it. And good night from the HR Happy Hour. We'll see you next time.
Good night, guys.
Thanks so much.
Great job. Super show. That was fun. I'm not sure
Thanks,
if it's David or Daniel, but great job, guys, if you're still with us.
Yeah, I'm right here. I don't know if Dave's still on, but thank you so much for having us on. And
hey, Daniel,
I hope
so
it
wasn't
too much
show.
Of a commercial. I hope it was, we're obviously enthusiastic, so I hope.
No, it was great. It was perfect. We followed our outline. It was great. Great story. And, I mean, and you know, like you guys said, it's right there. Go try it out. It's free. Get in, jump in, and I mean, that's the huge that's a huge difference for folks these days, and so really appreciate it.
Cool. So now that we're offline, I don't know, are we still online?
We're not streaming live on the internet, but this does make the archive recording.
Okay. Well, we've got some pretty cool stuff coming over in the next few months, so I'll be sure to keep you up to date. We are definitely not done with where we're heading. So I think you'll be excited with what we're up to.
You know, Daniel, I didn't get a chance to ask this question. I brought up 37 signals. You know, the context I also wanted to ask about was, how do you say no, or do you say no to feature requests? Because you must get a lot of them from your customers. How do you decide? I'm not putting that in. That's just going to bloat up my
stuff. Sure. So there's two basic. So 37 signals got to have this great thing, which is like all features should sit on the doorstep, have to bang on the door to get in. Right? So the actual way to say no is that you make the default answer no to everything. You just say no, we're not doing that. Or thank you very much. It's a great idea. We'll think about it. So that's important. I mean, you know, part of it is the business model. When you design a business model like ours where it's not dependent upon we have to get that next big deal if we don't say yes, it makes it easier. Like, with lots of small deals coming in and turning and converting and rolling up. That's one. Two is, you know, you just try to make the stance about no. Three is culture. Like, I mean, we give awards to our developers for killing features. So, you know, they're skeptical of new stuff. But the fourth, and fourth and fifth. So the fourth one is have a vision. Like, we know where we want to take this. Like, we have an idea of what we stand for. Like, be opinionated, which is the 37 signal thing. Like, have an opinion. Don't have a point of view. Like, people hate, the reason I think a lot of enterprise software sucks is because it's very personality-less. It doesn't laugh at itself. It doesn't have a point of view about what it's trying to do. It's just very, you know, administrative, until your day is here, right? And the last thing, and this is, I sort of alluded to it, which is look at the data, right? When you're a SaaS vendor, you should know how people use it.
Right.
There's a feature in the corner that nobody touches. And our general rule is if less than 5% of the people are using a feature, we kill it. And you know what happens? At first, you're like, oh, my gosh, what will happen? And then you find out, you kill the feature, and you find out, does anyone call and complain? And most of the time they don't. If you kill something and then everyone's like up in arms, they're freaking out about it, you know, you just roll it back and put it back in, or you change it, or you implement it the right way. But the data tells you. I mean, again, consumer software, that's what consumer software companies do. That's what Facebook does. They get rid of stuff that they see people aren't using enough. That's the answer. Look, a huge part of this has to do with the economics of your business. How do you structure how your deals are going to be won? It's very difficult to do that if you're dependent upon a few giant deals all the time.
Right.
Because you just have to. You have no choice. You have to say yes. That's where we got ourselves into trouble at Work Brain Training.
Yeah. And when you're walking into a deal knowing there's three other guys who have mostly the same solution you have, and if you have one or two less features than the third guy walking through that room, he's going to win, right?
Yeah. So another thing that we should talk about. Yeah. The other thing I think we learned to do is, you know, pick your customers. Yeah. What's his name? Marshall Goldsmith taught us this. He's like, you know, don't work with losers, work with winners. And so, you know, you just get some ordinary people like, well, I won't buy this. You know, you're like, great, don't buy it. That's okay. We'll just, you know, we have other customers. You just got to decide who you want to work with. And you know, you're like, we're never going to make these people happy. It's not going to work because they want this. If they're coming to us because they want to just build a plain old new performance review, old performance review, but just cheaper or something like that, then they're not a good customer for us. I think part of that also is differentiation. Like, you're right. Like, if we were in a future-to-future head bake-off with some of the other players, like, you know, we wouldn't win, right? Like, because we don't have, like, a multi-rater, six competency,
right,
famagamba,
nine box
whatever,
model, right, sure.
Because, frankly, I think that's mostly baloney, but that's okay. So, you know, we're framing ourselves, like, you change the rules of the competition. The rules of the competition are, do you people like, you know, I love this thing. I mean, I love that there's, like, this competition about who has the best customer satisfaction right now between, I guess, Halogen and SuccessFactors. Because my question is, like, who exactly is filling out the customer satisfaction thing? Because if you actually ask, like, how do the people who have to use this thing feel about it, I don't think they'd be rating anyone very high in customer satisfaction. You may make the HR people happy, but the users, no, I don't think so.
Yeah,
so,
and then
long
that's,
answer to
I
question,
probably,
but, like,
yeah, no, and a lot of that's coming from, you know, when I raise a bug ticket or a support ticket, do I get an answer? If I get an answer quickly, I'm satisfied, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of that measurement, right?
Yeah, I mean, but we do that too. I mean, look, we're like all over. We do that too. We just like we respond directly to the people, right? Like, and you know, be really human. Like, I think, you know, we've taught our people that, like, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff we do. Like, we don't really have a separate support department because we think developers, if you're building something, it's a craft, right? Like, you should build it, and if you made something that made someone's life bad, you should talk to that person. And it creates a great incentive, right? They want to build something great, and at the same time, they get to know and empathize with the people that they're building the software for. And frankly, from a motivational perspective, for software developers, the fact that they're building something that makes someone say, hey, I love this piece, that's so rewarding for them. They actually care about that. And that's just, you know, it's a different mindset. So listen, there's stuff that we get away with because, you know, we're a smaller, newer vendor. It's easy for us to throw stones. Other people can't get the same, they don't always have the same opportunities. But, yeah, I mean, so the answer to your question is there's a whole bunch of stuff that allows us to say no and try and keep the thing lean and streamlined and, you know, changing fast to keep it really fresh and simple and easy to use.
Right. Yeah, no, we're excited about what's going to be coming in the future. Absolutely keep us in the loop. We'll hopefully see you guys again, if not sooner or later, maybe out at HR Tech again in the fall.
Ooh,
yeah, for sure we're going to be at HR Tech. Vegas. For sure. And, Vegas for sure. And I should have mentioned, like, you know, let us know how we can help out at HR Evolution. I'm sure we'd love to do something.
You guys are coming, right?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I'll pass that on. We ran out of time at the end of the show, but you know, I said get your tickets. I didn't say this. I didn't get to leak, right, Sean? I said I was going
to
leak some information on the show, and I never got to the leak. But the full agenda is done. The hotel, the venue is signed.
So where is it, by the way?
I want to know.
It's in Atlanta, Georgia. Okay. It's on April 28th. 8th and 29th. So it's basically like a Friday night, you know, cocktail hour, happy hour, Saturday event. You know, 99% sure. No one's going to listen this far into the archives in the night. So 99% sure the event itself is going to be held at the Georgia Tech Conference Center at Georgia Tech.
Ooh.
In Atlanta. And then the hotel is called the Hotel Palomar, which is just like a couple of blocks away from Georgia Tech. Really cool, kind of funky hotel. So
great.
Hopefully contract signed tonight, and we're ready to go get those last remaining tickets sold. And, you know, we're going to have another great event, I think. A lot of our friends and favorites and some new people as well. We've got the Chief Human Resources Officer from Kimberly-Clark.
Who's going
to give a speech in the morning, a little opening keynote action, and some great content throughout the day. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So
super.
Just sell those last few tickets, and we'll be all set. So we're looking forward to that.
Great.
But, yeah, great.
Okay.
So, anyway, thanks so much, Daniel. I don't want to hold you up, but you can get
Thank
on to the rest
you.
Of your night. We really appreciate it. Super show. Shauna, great job. If you're still listening on the archive, God bless you. We got some great shows coming. We're trying to put together a union show, so we got to get some,
yeah,
we got to leverage some of this chaos in Wisconsin and New Jersey and other places with the unions. We're going to try to dive into some of that. We're going to do another sports show because, heck, I just can, and we're going to do it.
Oh,
and then,
you have been so good. It's been forever. You deserve one, Steve.
We're doing a sports show. I wrote about sports again today on the blog. I'm just hopeless how pathetic I am. But
stop.
So that's it. So great. Super job. I guess I'll play us out, Shauna. Great job, as always. And we'll see you
Night,
next
everyone.
Time. We'll see you next time on the HR Happier Show. I'm going to play an old one, Shauna, just for you. Here we go.
Ah.
You have.